So it's me again. I have been taking piano lessons. This is a little Saigon report update. I've been taking piano lessons at a local school, and that's been helping. Mostly to remind me that there's probably a good reason to not go off and invent your own musical symbol systems. I was getting ready to do that a couple months ago, and I thought, you know, Dan, doesn't this remind you of when you thought about becoming a programmer? And you know, Dan, that you're basically half autodidact and also half lazy learner, which means I enjoy a good lecture, and frankly, paying for a piano class is like being prodded in the side to practice. So the lessons are helping. The topic for this little Saigon update is not a really happy one. I think I'm going to try to make it funny. I really don't know if I can. The tone of funny is probably not bass clef. Ha, you know I'm learning stuff. We all know happy funny's up here. That's funny, or here. But it's probably not here. Catch that beat. Anyways, no, so yeah, the topic of World War III. It looks like the world's going crazy. Now, I don't want to go off and talk about Professor Davies because in other podcasts that I've recently uploaded to SoundCloud from blogs past that have been destroyed by economic catastrophe that I don't want to go into, well, I've talked about Davies and I've talked about expectations and reality and how the divergence of those two things and the rate of the divergence can cause social disarray. It's a topic I've discussed, but what I will tell you is the world is going crazy. I kind of expected it to. I kind of saw it a few years ago. Most people were staring at their glowing rectangles. Most people stare at their glowing rectangles, you know, their smart devices, which again, like the Patriot Act, smart device doesn't really say what it is, but yeah, most people are staring at their smart device, and that smart device is telling them that the world is fine. And like the dog in the bar on fire, it's all okay, everything's fine, the bar's on fire. I feel like I need a different organ for this. It's like, this is not. Oh, yeah, that's it right there. Yeah, that's right there. So yeah, the world's going a bit crazy. And so I decided to sort of make a list here of, I don't know, information that might be relevant to this discourse. And I broke it into four basic groups. I don't know if I'll stick to those groups. The groups basically are why, you know, why is it happening? And I, like I said, part of the reason is the world's going crazy, but it's more complicated than that. And then there's the where. Like, if World War III started, where would be the flashpoint? I mean, that's a fun conversation for people that don't give a shit about the human race. I actually care about the human race, so it's not a super fun conversation for me. But you know what? We'll entertain the topic of where, the scenario under which it could happen. Okay. And then there's the, you know, what happens in terms of the timeline after it happens, like after the trigger point. What is the basic timeline? And then, of course, the last section, section four, is, you know, what happens afterward? We're in the aftertime of World War III, the time that Einstein told us about, where if there were a World War IV, we would use sticks and stones, probably giant trebuchet made of wood that would hurl large boulders, because that's where the escalation of sticks and stones would lead in the first 100 years. But he's right. World War IV would probably, you know, be pretty fucking lame by comparison. It'd probably be really lame by comparison, that World War IV. So yes, that's what I'll try to talk about. Now, you know, free admission, it's Saturday. I finished a work week. I'm kind of, I don't know, it's weird. As an anarchist, I have a hard time being okay about living a quasi-normal existence. It's sort of depressing. But you know what, though? I'm not against normality in the sense of people being happy. I'm just kind of against feeding the machine. And when you participate in anything these days, you're more or less part of it. And, you know, it's kind of hard. Like, how do you say? What do you say to people? Well, I just had one stupid job writing programs. I didn't do any of the bad crap. And it's like, you know, I think we're all kind of responsible for the bad crap right now. But that's a separate topic, too. Anywho, so why is it going to happen? Why World War III? Well, here's a couple reasons. One, our government has a bad habit of pulling major false flags when the economy is in a terrible state. And let's be blunt, you know, whatever your opinion is, and you might be one of the lucky ones, but whatever your opinion is, the world economy has been mostly shit for 10 years. And yes, it's the longest recovery on record, and yes, the stock market's amazing, but it's basically been the most anemic recovery on record, too. And if you subtract out all the money printing and all the financial chicanery, which is just another topic I've discussed before and I don't want to discuss right now. So it's basically been a mess. And so it's possible that, yeah, the economy's turning to crap and our government probably, or at least some faction of our government, because again, saying the U.S. government is like probably saying the Husky football team. You don't really know who's doing what, but yeah. So yeah, our government, some faction, maybe the CIA, who the hell knows? I don't know. I'm just a fish in an aquarium making guesses. And another reason why related to this is to do with just worldwide debt. You know, depending upon how you measure it, the world is either, in terms of real debt, 300 trillion in debt, or maybe 4 quadrillion. And again, whether it's 300 trillion to 4 quadrillion, you need to think about this. Worldwide GDP, I think, even to this day, is still in the 70s, which means somewhere between 70 and 80 trillion a year. So yeah, if you wanted to pay off 300 trillion, that would probably take 50 years if you don't want to destroy the economy, probably at least 20. You could do it in 10 if you could achieve amazing economic growth, but no one's buying moon bonds yet. No one's buying moon bonds yet, so no. But fundamentally, and this is not my original belief, one of the people that brought me to this belief is a brilliant writer by the name of James Howard Kunstler, but not the only one, but one of the brilliant minds who's kind of forced at least some people to think about where their energy comes from. I think, you know, peak oil is real, and I think we've been on the Rocky Plateau. Hubbard predicted the Rocky Plateau. He predicted that there would be a point, basically some point in the future, where you would reach the peak, but it wouldn't be a smooth peak. It would essentially be a kind of jarring, riveting, ratcheting motion between high oil prices and some growth, or low oil prices and no growth. And essentially, you know, that's what we've kind of experienced. And Japan has kind of been there for about 30 years. So we need to be honest about these things. We need to have honest conversations about why the world is so fucking stressed out. And if we had those honest conversations, we might be able to avoid World War III. World War III is terrible. And so, yeah, more honesty, more truth. Imagine what would happen if we'd have an honest conversation about why we're boiling tar sands. I mean, you know, you don't boil tar sands in Canada. Society, civilizations don't do that if oil is abundant and everywhere. I'm just saying, if oil is everywhere, if it's everywhere abundant, you do not boil tar sands, you don't break big rocks into little rocks. And you certainly don't disrupt the world with wars and invasions and massive death if oil is super abundant. So yeah, fundamentally the why I've listed it, you know, economics, basically. The where is kind of a different kind of question. So I inadvertently turned off my recorder, but the good news is I think it saved it. It's just that it's a broken process. I heard someone coming up the stairway, I get paranoid about talking into my apartment because I don't think the walls are that thick, and I'm fairly convinced people can hear what I'm doing. I don't know. I guess I'll find out. If I get angry messages or emails or some type of thing, I'll find out. So where could World War III start? Well, Syria is a mess. So yeah, Syria could be terrible. There's already Russian forces there. Certainly could start there. It could also start in North Korea, though I don't know how he's doing it, why he's doing it, because I don't trust Trump any more than anyone else. But it seems like some of the policies vis-a-vis North Korea are working, maybe. So yeah, North Korea could happen, but I think the likelihood's very low. I think a war with China, because of the trade war, isn't impossible if China decides to flex its muscles. For example, China, in retaliation to all these trade actions, could decide to invade Taiwan. So if China decides to invade Taiwan, we do have a, well, supposedly still in effect, agreement with Taiwan, a mutual defense pact. And in theory, yeah, United States could get pulled into a conflict with China. Or we could simply say, you know, this is the last straw, whatever, after the scrap the islands, blah, blah, blah. But, you know, honestly, I don't know. I think Trump wouldn't do it. I think he would back off. I think right now it seems more likely that he would not decide to do that. But I really don't know. I think that if China invaded Taiwan, it would be a simple stepping stone along the path. And I do think if there are factions of our government that want a World War III, that would be the quickest way. That would be one of the quickest ways there. Certainly the fastest ways there. So there's Syria, there's Taiwan. North Korea is not super likely. Another possibility is obviously Iran. If there is some type of conflict with Iran, which also looks like it's being ginned up. And I think you have to look at the whole Syria, Iraq, Iran scenario as part of the same problem. We have been fomenting destabilizing countries, and add Libya to the list and other countries. We've been destabilizing these countries for the purpose of controlling petroleum. It's not that complicated. And also, but controlling how the oil and the natural gas and other, you know, carbohydrate energy products get shipped around, whether it's through pipelines or whatnot. So a lot of this is about controlling the flow of oil resources, hydrocarbon resources. And yeah, it's a big deal, you know, whether it's methyl hydrates or natural gas or oil or fracking or any of the extraordinary measures you do when you get to the bottom of the barrel of the oil barrel. Yeah, it's a big deal. So these, you know, operations, which look completely planned by our government, in my opinion, and probably relate to 9/11 in ways I don't want to talk about. Yeah, these operations have destabilized a huge part of the world, and Iran could be the next country that we just decide to topple. And if that happens, you know, here's the thing. The Iranians claim they have no nuclear weapons. I think the Iranians are playing it smart, like kind of like Israel did for a couple of decades. Israel claimed not to have nuclear weapons. I mean, everybody knew that was bullshit, but they claimed they didn't. I think Iran may be doing the same thing. I think the horrible scenario with Iran in World War III is that they've already got a few nukes. They've set them aside, and they're going to use them if push comes to shove. And Israel certainly has nukes. They have hydrogen bombs. They could certainly take out a lot of countries, and I wouldn't even be surprised if there's one missile program for Berlin. I just truly don't know. But the bottom line is, a nuclear exchange between Iran and Israel would probably turn into a worldwide nuclear war very quickly. And here's the problem with nuclear wars. All things being equal, and there are exceptions. I mean, there are technologies to harden electronics, to harden computer chips. But all things being equal, nuclear war is acidic to the technologies that allow you to turn off nuclear war. Now, I know that sounds crazy what I just said, but essentially, it isn't just the EMP, it's the persistent radiation, it's the basic damage to infrastructure. The very technology we would need to turn a war off, to communicate with our enemy and say, you know, let's just stop where we're at right now, that very technology gets destroyed very quickly. And so when people say things like you can have a limited nuclear war, yes, I know about, I think his name was Khan or something, K-A-H-N, from the 50s. I remember reading his freaking book on the, I think it was on the theory of nuclear war, but he talked about levels of nuclear war or something like that. It was horrible. And yeah, there are people who believe in limited nuclear war, that you can have a limited exchange and come to some agreement. But the problem is the technology that would allow you to come to that agreement gets destroyed very quickly. And then you have the emotional and psychological factors. You know, people get into that situation and they say, listen, we've lost almost everyone. They've only lost half their people. The logic gets thrown out the window and people just want revenge. So yeah, Iran versus Israel in a nuclear exchange would pretty much immediately become World War III. Now, the question I kind of drifted into, and it's kind of important, is this issue of escalation. So this gets us into topic, actually topic number three, which means we're almost done and you can go home. Yeah, you can almost go home if you want to go home, but this is, what happened. So here's my perspective. And again, I studied this stuff a long time ago, and I'm not claiming I was like von Clausewitz back then. I was never in combat. I was a U.S. Army officer for a short period of time, and I was probably mediocre. And I was probably a mediocre graduate student as well. So this is just a perspective on what would happen in terms of the timeline, if World War III started in a way that wasn't immediate. A Iran-like Israel exchange, that would be immediate. But let's say we're talking about the Taiwan scenario, a kind of conventional scenario that could balloon into World War III. I think in the first 24 to, I would say, I don't know, the first 24 to 100 hours, you could have that kind of sustained combat, conventional combat operations, and maybe even up to the first 1,000 hours. But I would say the closer you get to the 1,000th hour, the more likely some partner, because it almost is like a systems theory problem, but the member of the game or your adversary in the game, the adversary will look at themselves and say, well, you know, I've lost a lot of my tanks and my planes and my ships, my ships are gone. My submarines are sunk. I've lost 100,000 men in one battle alone. And that adversary is going to say, you know, if I started using just the little ones, the tactical nukes, the 20 kiloton thingies, anyways, I could just use the little ones. And so that's how it starts. And that's the thing. Sometime in the, you know, I don't know that we could fight a conventional World War III for very long before both sides had basically run out of weapons. Because a lot of our weapons tend to be very, very craft, you know, high-tech things. And they don't, I mean, I don't think we have a massive production scale. So if we lost a lot of our, for example, fighter jets, I seriously doubt we're going to rapidly replace them in the first week. So that's the problem with conventional war in World War III. The technology is more important than mass production. So once your pretty toy gets blown out of the sky, it isn't as easy to just call up Walmart and say, give me 50 more. I mean, yeah, maybe if we were in the 3D printer land, maybe we're almost there. Maybe you could just print them away. But we're not. I don't think we're there yet. So, yeah. Sometime between hour 500 and hour 1,000, your adversary might use a nuke. And once that starts happening, like I said, I don't believe in the concept of limited nuclear war. I do believe that war has states. Like, you could reach a point in a nuclear exchange where sides simply stop. They don't do it because they talk to each other. They do it because they just can't even carry on the war any longer. Like, that could happen, both in terms of morale and technology. You could have a scenario where nuclear wars like that really crappy early jalopy automobile where the engine turns over, you get a puff of smoke and nothing happens. I'm not saying that would be a happy outcome, but it would be preferable to worldwide annihilation. In that kind of scenario, you probably would still lose about a third of the world's population, at least eventually through cancers. I mean, you would lose probably 20% at least. But in that scenario, the war ends. It probably ends after, you know, 20 or more cities on both sides are completely vaporized. That would be horrible. And that's a really, yeah, subtle way of saying that. So that's the timeline. So what happens? What happens in the aftermath? This is section 4 of our discussion of World War III as a Little Saigon report. What happens in the aftermath? Because that's a big question. And I thought about this, and I think it starts out... It starts out with the human beings rising up from their cave zones. They will walk upon the earth and look upon it and say to themselves, "My God, I'm still alive. That's amazing." They will, the rich people of Magnolia, who've had the Link light rail shut down this week, think about those scenarios, will crawl out of the Link light rail tunnel system underground Chud Morlock cave zone, and they will rightfully take charge of the planet as our overlords. And when I say rightfully, not because I think they have any right to it, but people have become addicted to a kind of life that is, you know, more or less without any real sense of dignity or choice. So I would love to believe that it will be an anarchist freedom wonderland. I know there are anarchists who believe that. I think it will be like that in some places. But I think in a lot of places, people will form thug armies. Mutant thug armies made of peoples who once had one arm or two arms. Now they have four arms. The mutants will walk the earth as the strangest creatures you can imagine, with their multiple arms and their 14 eyes. The mutants will sail forth on ships made of iron and steel and blood. And if you've ever seen that cartoon, I remember when I was growing up, called Thundar, spelled Thundarr. There's actually a YouTube video showing the intro online. But they talk about a world of super science and sorcery, where Bill Gates will have a rotating head. One side will be war. The other side of Bill Gates' head will be labeled I really don't know. One side will be labeled war, and the other side of Bill Gates' head will be labeled Microsoft. And this new civilization that Einstein spoke about in terms of World War IV and whatnot, the civilization of trebuchet and orca, mutant orca whales that can walk on land, imagine that. Yes, the orca armies will form up against us because of the crap we did to the Earth. And you know what? The crap we did to them. I feel like I'm on their, even though I'm in the past, this is the future, I feel like I'm on their side, I'll be honest with you. The mutant elephants and orcas will join forces. Mutant elephant and orca armies with orangutan cohorts. The gorillas did not evolve. So you'll have an orangutan army of mutant orangutans. You'll have a mutant elephant army and a mutant orca army forming up to invade Seattle as the people of the Magnolia Cave Zone try to escape. They will see these ships arrive. Their mutant army thugs will be drunk someplace in Fremont. Yes, their mutant thug army, multi-armed, multi-eyed army, protecting the Magnolia Cave people. They'll be drunk in Fremont, so the orangutans and the orcas will have their way. As they rise up from the water, the orcas walking 15 feet tall will totally freak people out. But the fact that the orcas are carrying giant crossbows, that will be kind of scary as well. And this is the thing, this is how it ends. So if you want to know what happens with World War III, it's not cool. It isn't something you should support. You need to ask if you, okay, I don't believe voting works, but if you believe voting works, you need to email your congressperson and ask them, why exactly do we have this massive defense budget? Why exactly do we have these hundreds of military bases worldwide? Weren't we supposed to be a free republic? I mean, I don't believe any of that works, but email them and ask them, why exactly are we antagonizing the world to the point of madness in World War III? Because I really think if we backed off, if we allowed things to stabilize, if we actually acted like honest brokers, this could, you know, have a happy ending where we don't have a nuclear war. So that's what I'm going to leave you with. Before I go, though, we should talk about what happens. The Battle of Magnolia. The Orca general named Gimbus 47. The Orca general Gimbus 47 orders his troops to rise up and crawl out of the sea. As they rise up from the sea, they begin to shoot their crossbows at the various humans from the Magnolia Zone, no longer protected by their drunken mutants. That Hale's ale's pretty good. And the orcas and the orangutans and the frickin' elephants. They trample down the streets of Magnolia Cave Zone 7 and they ruin every espresso cart. People are crestfallen. Actually, I can't talk about this because it just gets horrible. If you had 15-foot tall mutant orca whales and mutant giant mutant elephants and pissed off mutant orangutans coming at you with any kind of weapons, and they're intelligent, as intelligent as people, maybe smarter, but at least as, I feel like your situation's probably not that great after World War III. You're probably going to end up a slave, and the human race will rightfully, So let's not have World War III. Bye-bye.